If I am to grow good corn, I must help my neighbor grow good corn. Now, what in the devil is that all about? This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, who doesn't know the devil. Okay, if I am to grow good corn, I must help my neighbor grow good corn. Now, you think to yourself, well, let my neighbor do his own growing. I mean, I'm going to do my thing and he can do his. Well, corn is a little special. Not too special, but it is a definite indicator of what we're talking about. I put in the finest corn seed in the world in my crop. I have acres and acres and acres of corn. Hundreds of acres of corn. I mean, you know, it's a big crop. And my crop is doing just beautifully. But on the edge of my property, where my neighbor has his property, my corn doesn't do too well. It seems to not be dying, but just sort of be very listless. And the corn stalks are not rich and verdant. The corn itself, leaping out from the shocks, is just sort of babyish and even a little bit retarded. And I think to myself, why would my corn near my neighbor's house, near my neighbor's property, near my neighbor's corn, why would it be less than perfect like mine on my general fields? But every year it seems to be creeping further and further into my corn crop, that this imperfect corn. And so I go over and I talk to my neighbor and I say, well, John, I'm having a little trouble with my corn. Right over here, it seems to, you know, be runted, you know, retarded. How's your corn doing? And John says, well, never been a good season for corn for me. I raise corn every year, and it just gets worse and worse and worse. And you say, well, John, may I offer some suggestions? Because I've been attempting to grow good corn, but where my property abuts yours, and where my corn crop abuts your corn crop, my corn is as stunted as your corn. I would like, if you would let me have the privilege, to take out your corn, chop it all down, and plant new corn, and use the hybrid corn that I'm using. Would you allow me to do that? Oh, come on, Herb. that's too much, you know. It's true my corn isn't as great as yours is, but that's too much. Well, look, John, I have a purely pecuniary interest in this. If your corn continues not to be of the high grade that I'm trying to raise, then my corn is going to, by being your neighbor, be torn down, because your corn is going to affect my corn. Your cross-pollination from your corn onto my corn is causing it to be runted also. So I'm doing this as a neighborly gesture, as a loving gesture, but as a purely a gesture to make my corn crop successful. And John says, well, I shouldn't do it. But you know, Herb, we've been neighbors for a long time. We've always gotten along very well. And you never butted in my business, and I never butted in your business. But I understand cross-pollination. And my corn is upwind from your field. And so when the wind blows, it blows right on down into your crop. And the cross-pollination just destroys your corn. I understand that. But I've been working on other areas of my property and other crops, and I hadn't given it much thought, because that's my back 40. That's not up front here near the house. And I say, well, do you mind if I help? He says, under one condition, you take half of the profit from the crop. And I say, well, look, why don't you just let me incorporate your corn into my corn and your crop into mine, and then raise it as mine, you know, with my tender, loving care, and all the fertilizer and stuff, and give you 50% of the amount your acres would produce. And he says, well, that's just what I asked for. I said, okay, that's fine. And that's what we'll do. So the next year, plow down his corn and cut it into the ground and disc it and harrow it and move it so that it's no longer there. So that his corn is no longer there. We cut it up, take it away, take it to the ensilage and remove it entirely from the property as much as possible so that none of that corn is going to be into the ground. There'll be some. And then I plant my hybrid seeds here. Over his 50 acres, beautiful hybrid seed. It's not a great area, but it's enough. And pretty soon, the first crop comes up. And the first crop looks good, but not quite as strong as it could be. Because in the soil, it has not the nutrients and other things that were necessary to bring out the fine crop. Because my corn crop, I change every year with some other crops to rejuvenate the soil and to bring up the nitrogen level of the soil and to do all the little things that make the crop beautiful. And so it takes 2 or 3 years. And then John comes over to me one day and he says, you know, Herb, I like having you as a neighbor. Well, thank you, John. I like having you too. He said, my corn crop now looks like I really know how to raise corn. And my neighbors who I talk to and look at my corn, they say, God, John, you're good, you know. Mm-hmm. And I say, well, thank you. And, you know, I'm taking credit for it. I hope you don't mind, Herb. I said, take all the credit you like. And in the process, remember, good corn cross-pollinates to good corn. Inferior corn cross-pollinates to destroy good corn and make it inferior. And you know, this is how our life is a great deal. Ellen was just talking about an email that she received from one of our students, which said that the terrorists were doing their terrorism because they were doing it for God and country, for their God and their country. And they didn't mind dying for their country. And Ellen says, that is something, you know. And I said, no, it's really not something. Every person who goes to war with the statement, I will give my life for my country. I will protect my country at all costs, at the cost of my life. And while most people don't realize what that means, you know, because they don't know what death is. They're 18 years old, you know, young people. They're going to war, and they're going into the army. They're going into the kamikazes, you know, when they would take their planes and crash them down on the ship to put a ship out of action. My goodness, what's the difference between being shot out of the sky or taking your plane loaded with high explosives and stopping the enemy, which is what you want to do? I mean, we call that so terrible. Well, it's nothing more than what every country teaches their young people, to give their life for their God and their country. Now, they forget about the God part. Many do, but they save for their country. But when we talk about these terrorist people, most of them don't have a country. And they want countries. But they're doing it for their God, because they're going out and they're destroying those people who they call infidels, those people who they call lesser than the divine spark that the rest of the world, you know, is. And they're doing it for God and country in their own way. Would that we were to teach our children values. And again, at the table, Ingeborg worked with her mother in the post office in Italy. And she had to go to the store sometimes. And her mother would give her money and say, go to the store. And when Ingeborg came back, she gave a recitation of what she'd spent the money for, how much was left to the penny, and gave it back to her mother, not thinking one penny of that should go anywhere else but into the family coffers. And she was taught never to take something that doesn't belong to you. She was taught all of these good virtues that every family theoretically teaches their children. But many parents will be angry at me for this, but many parents are unhappy that their children are not turning out so well. Well, Where did you allow your children to get their education? Did you find that earning a living was more important than taking care of your children? Do you have to live on such a high scale of living to have all the amenities that the modern day life offers that you have to go and have a job all day long and you can't train your children? Well, then you shouldn't have children. But you shouldn't have children. And this is the truth. People feel that children are a necessary part of being married, but also a necessary part of being married is to train the children. And to train the children takes time. It takes loving time. You know when the child comes to you and says, "Mommy," and you say, "Not now, I'm busy, I'm making supper, I'm doing this, I'm doing that." "Mommy," well, if you're a parent, you take a minute. That's all it usually takes. And you say, "Yes, sweetheart, what is it?" And they say, "I have a tummy ache." And then you do what is necessary. They say, "Johnny hit me with a stick." You do what's necessary. You say, "Now, what did you do that made Johnny want to do that?" Well, now, if you would stop doing those things, Johnny wouldn't want to hit you anymore. But it just takes 2 minutes. And you train the values into the child. And these are values that stay with them all of their life. And they never lie. They never cheat. They never steal. They don't want to because that's not their nature. That's not their nature. It's only later when we say God and country, you know, apple pie, God and country, you know, sort of thing, you know. And what should we do for our God? Well, strange as it may sound, and again, you will hate me for this, what should we do with our neighbor? We should love our neighbor like we love ourselves. But we have to learn how to love ourselves at home. So love your neighbor like yourself. And if you love your neighbor, how can you go to war with your neighbor? How can you want your neighbor's land? How can you want your neighbor's wife or husband? How can you want your neighbor's property? How can you want your neighbor's house or car or the computer? How could you ever steal? When I was raised, the world was exactly like it is today. But we never locked our houses. We locked our front door because that was not the door you're to use. You're supposed to always come in the back door. And we lock our front door when we leave, when we go out to the lake cottage, because we wanted people to know we weren't home. And our friends would come to the front door. Our real good friends would come to the back door and come right on in and sit down, have a cup of coffee with us. But the thing is, when you love your neighbor like yourself, you cannot go to war against them. You cannot hurt them. You cannot do anything. You know, war is not the worst thing in the world. The worst thing in the world is to speak evil about your neighbor. If you never spoke evil about your neighbor, you would never have a war. If you'd be like Thumper, his mother said, "Thumper?" And he said, "Yeah, I know. I know, Ma, I know. If you can't say something nice, don't say nothing at all." And this is what we should teach our children and ourselves. This is what the forest creatures were taught in the show Bambi. But, of course, it's what the children are supposed to be taught. And are they taught that? Yes, they are. But many are not. And those many who are not, they form the cadre of people who are troublemakers. Not because they're bad, but they haven't got any values. And who's going to give them these values? Well, not our present-day society, with broken homes, with parents who care more about other things, television, for instance, instead of their own family. A parent is watching television, the kid comes in, wants some attention. Does a parent take time for the kid? No. The television takes the time. The television has come in to become a persuasive enemy of normal child raising, of normal family life. And that's what the world is all about, is normal family life where a mother and father and family interact with one another. It was bad enough when the radio came in and the newspaper. That was the worst that started it all out. People would come home and read the newspaper. "Don't bother me, I'm reading the newspaper." I remember when my dad did that. And then, "Don't bother me, I'm listening to the news on the radio." And then, "Don't bother me, I'm watching news on TV, you know." "But Dad, you watched it." "I know, but I'm watching the latest edition." That was the three editions before. Every hour on the hour, the news comes out, you know. But why have children? True, we'd have a smaller population on Earth, but why have children if we're not going to raise them in the values that we think are important? Because surely we are raising them in the values that we think are important right now. But also, my friends, remember, the children are like the corn in the field. And if you raise a good crop and you take care of it, you'll have a good crop of corn. But if the neighbor children are not well raised, and they come over and they talk to your children, and they talk them into nonsense, which they shouldn't be able to do because they have values. But if they talk them into nonsense, "Oh, it won't hurt anything. Let's be just be fun. Let's tie the can on the tail of the cat, you know. Ha ha, let's laugh." And you see, that sort of stuff, that's terrorism. That's meanness. Those are things that will take a crop of corn and little by little destroy it until the crop of corn is stunted and gives off almost nothing of value. That's what our children are today. They're being stunted because of the television, because of the computers, of the internet, of the pornographic material that's available. And it doesn't have to be very pornographic. A lot of these movies that you watch today of only husbands or only wives, I don't mean that, you know, only men or only women living together, which is not bad, but the thing is, what values are they teaching their children? Are they teaching them family values? Well, if we are a family-oriented world, which indeed we are, then we should teach family-oriented things to children. And when Leave It to Beaver and those other shows were, "Ha ha, who wears a tie to supper? Who wears a jacket when you're sitting at the table like Beaver's dad and stuff like that?" Well, who? It's not a matter of the jacket or the tie. It's a matter of respect. You bring respect to the table. The tie and jacket were merely a symbol of that respect. But you bring respect to the table, and the children will have respect. Now, could Beaver do bad things? Oh, he got into mischief now and then. But could he do bad things? No, because his conscience wouldn't let him to do it. Now, I can name a lot of other shows if I were thinking of the names, but the one fellow, the kid living alone with his father and his aunt, and it's a nice family, you know, but it was an imperfect family. It was an imperfect family. It was a family. Why didn't they have the family of mother and father living together and stuff? Because that's so ordinary. So they're promoting the unordinary, because that's interesting. Just like crime. Crime is not the ordinary thing. It's the unordinary. And people who get involved with crimes are not the normal people. They are the people who are not given the values that they should have had when they were growing up. So we say, if I am to grow a good corn crop, I must help my neighbor grow good corn too. You see how valuable that is? When we lived in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, and we lived there during the Depression, and so the neighbor kids spent a lot of time at our house. Not because they didn't have nice houses themselves, and nice families, I'm sure. But we hardly ever knew their parents or knew their families because they were always at our house. Because my dad always made sure we had food on the table, lots of food. And so the neighbor children who didn't have so much came over and ate with us. But the blessing that the neighbor children, who even now talk about it, is that they remember how they were treated at our house. And they took that respect home to their house. And Ellen, she has such a chagrin and surprise about her. She says, "Why does this woman contact us? It's wonderful, we love her, but why does she contact us? We knew her only when we had our summer home in Bibliona on the ocean. Why does she contact us? Why did she come and see us?" Because that was over 50 years ago. And her family was surely a nice family. But she came into Ellen's house and was treated with royalty, was treated with dignity, was expected to be as good as Ellen's children were trained to be. And she remembered that all of her life. And now she's still making contact with the family wherever she moves, wherever she lives. Because that family taught her the values of life that were important for her to live and be the beautiful person she is today. We all can give stories like that if we'd stop and think about it. If our family was a beautiful family where our parents gave us values, then we're like the good corn. We sort of swoop over into the other field and make their corn, you know, a finer hybrid of corn. Think on these things. It's worth it. Life is really worth it. You don't say, "Where is my child tonight?" You say, "My children are always with me in the evening, sharing and learning the values of life, so each can grow the finest crop of corn that the world has ever seen." I love you. I bless you. And I see you enjoying corn on the cob as much as I do.